Good evening, everyone. I call to order the Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, August 6, 2024. It is now 6 o'clock. This meeting may also be viewed on Channel 20 and is available on live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. Are we live with the phone at the moment? Yes, great. Members of the public may also provide public comment during the meeting by calling 805-312-6639. The phone line is now open. Be aware that the live stream can sometimes be up to a minute behind what's actually happening in the room. So call in early, just hang out on the phone. Let's rise for the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ms. Rotana, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Hoffman?
Here.
Commissioner Holden?
Here.
Commissioner Halverson?
Here.
Vice Chair Swift?
Here.
And Chair Mann?
Here. At this time, the Planning Commission will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests for or make announcements for any changes in the order of the day. Do we have any adjustments to the agenda as presented? Seeing no changes, do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I move we approve the agenda as submitted.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Ms. Matana, this requires a voice vote. So all in favor, which means I get to lead it. So would all in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion passes. We now move on to a period of public communications. During this time, the commission will allow public communication. Any member of the public may address the commission for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this commission. The commission will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the commission cannot act on items not on the agenda. And I will repeat, please call in at 805-321-6639 if you would like to provide public comment by phone. Public comment is open.
Elizabeth Dukas, North Grover Beach. I don't know if this is on, but can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to speak about the requirement for retention basins in residential properties for anything that's being done. There's been some comments on Nextdoor that they provide no extra water retention other than what a flat piece of land would do. They cause problems. They're expensive. They require drains. And I want to know if you're requiring the same thing of commercial properties. What are you requiring of commercial properties? On the two new projects being built on 4th and Grand, what is their retention policy? Are they using gray water? Other than low flow toilets and shower heads, what are they being required to do to maintain, you know, viable aquifer as opposed to the commercial buildings paving over every little square inch, not even being required to use permeable pavers? And so in order for it to be equitable and in the future for residents to not have to have that, for residential properties to not have to do the ponding basins or the retention basins, it's a huge cost. It doesn't do anything more than just a backyard grass, and it strips people of being allowed to use their backyards. I've seen a couple of them. They take up a huge amount of space. You can't have a barbecue pit. You can't have chairs out there. I mean, it's really, really onerous upon the residents. And also, I don't know if this is going to be spoken of later, but three-story heights. I noticed in the Mar Breeze development, that new home that's being built, it looks like it's four stories. with a deck on top? If somebody could please clarify that, because there are R1, R2, and R3 differentiations in zoning. And so I could see it in maybe R3 for low-income housing, but for any other use in this town, without proper water guidelines to go with extra stories, with extra footage, with all of this, then we're doing a disservice to the citizens all the way around. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I apologize for interrupting, but I've been given information that there is no sound coming through the recording, if we could verify that. Though the microphone was on, it is not being heard televised.
Are we saying just the one that's at the podium or everyone's? Could we have someone from the tech group come and take a look at that, please? Okay. Is it appropriate to move on? Thank you very much for your comment. Is there anyone else in the room who wants to speak at this time in this period of public communication? Seeing no one raise their hand or move forward, Ms. Ratana, is there anyone on the line?
No, there's not.
Thank you very much. Is there a way to verify that? You would like to speak at the podium? Well, please come forward. We'd love to hear what you have to say.
I'm Marcia Bolianitz, and I had a meeting with Wendy Sims last week, and I don't think the recording is fixed, and I don't think the phone hookup is fixed. So if somebody knows shorthand, I'm not sure. I'm not an official, and I'm not a tech person, but there was some machine over here that she was waiting for a tech to fix. And
I have been informed, so again, sorry for the interruption, mm-hmm. that they can now hear through slow spam. I don't know about callers, but slow spam folks are able to hear the recording. And as I'm aware, we've been having issues with the phone call-in for some time, and we were hoping that it would be fixed, but I don't know that it'll be fixed for Planning Commission this evening.
The only way to check is to have somebody call in.
We do. We're having an IT check on that right now.
Is it appropriate to close out this phase of public comment, or should we wait until we can go ahead? All right.
There is not a problem. John is just from IT has just called in, so there's not a problem with our call in.
Okay. So we're not at the moment seeing anyone on the line for this phase of public comment. There will be other times for the public to comment on individual items in just a moment. So I will close public comment for now. We now move on to our consent agenda. If there is any member of the public who wishes to address the commission on the item listed on the consent agenda, which is our minute meetings, please call in at 805-321-6639. I will note that the commission cannot discuss or ask questions on any item on the consent agenda. If you'd like to discuss the item, it needs to be pulled from the consent agenda. Is anyone requesting to do that? No. Is there any member of the public here who would like to speak to the consent agenda? Seeing no hands go up, is there anyone online? I will close public comment for the consent agenda. The item on the consent agenda is the minute meetings of the July 2nd Planning Commission. Do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I will move to approve the consent agenda as written.
And I will second it. This is a roll call vote. Clerk Ratana, would you kindly call the roll?
Commissioner Hoffman?
Yes.
Commissioner Halverson?
Yes.
Commissioner Holden?
Yes.
Vice Chair Swift?
Yes.
And Chair Mann?
Yes. Motion passes unanimously. We now move on to the public hearing items, starting with item number 2. As a reminder, if you'd like to call in for public comment on the item, please call in at 805-321-6639. Item 2 is development application 24-37. The applicant is Eldorado Holdings, LLC, and Director Martin will give us a presentation.
Thank you. This is a request by Eldorado for a one-year time extension of development application 21-18. Next slide, please. This request, development application 2118, is a request to operate a commercial cannabis manufacturing, processing, and distribution facility. The applicants requested additional time, as similar with so many of the other requests that we've seen recently, pinning down contractors has been difficult in this post-COVID era. Next slide, please. A building permit application is ready to be issued pending payment. And with that, staff recommends that your commission adopt the resolution approving the development application to extend this application for one additional year. That concludes staff's presentation, and I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you, Director Martin. Do any commissioners have any questions for staff about the presentation?
No.
Seeing no hands go up. I will open the public hearing for this item. Is anyone in the room or online would like to talk? If you'd like to speak to item number 2, please come forward. Seeing no one in the room, is there anyone on the phone? I will close public comment. Is that public comment needs to be reopened for the applicant to speak? Is the applicant here? I don't see the applicant, so I will not reopen public comment.
Chair, if you could close the public hearing rather than public comment.
Sorry, the public hearing. The public hearing is now closed. So two different things. Okay, so we got through that. Do any commissioners wish to provide any other comments on the report? Seeing none, I will invite a motion to approve development application 2437.
I'll move that we approve application 2437 extension, one-year extension on their application.
I will second it.
Clerk Ratana, would you please call the roll?
Vice Chair Swift?
Yes.
Commissioner Halverson?
Yes.
Commissioner Hoffman?
Yes.
Commissioner Holden?
Yes.
And Chair Mann?
Yes. We'll now move on to item 3. Item 3 is development application 24-25. The applicants are Allison and Kellen Costello. Forgive me if I've mispronounced your name. And we'll hear a presentation from Senior Planner Kyle Bell.
Is that up here? All right, thank you. It looks like we're one ahead. Thank you for your patience. All right, good evening. Tonight we will be reviewing an application for a lot line adjustment that is intended to correct a non-conforming property line between two existing properties and a request for a variance to reduce the side yard setback and minimum lot width requirements to accommodate the realignment of the property line. The project site is located at the corner of Trouville Avenue and South 7th Street. The project site is located in the medium density residential zone. and the two separate and consists of two separate legal lots that were originally under the common ownership when the original residence at 729 Trueville was constructed. The property at 595 South 7th Street was sold in 2014 and subsequently redeveloped with a new residence in 2016. The property owner of 729 Trueville completed a land survey and discovered the existing residence was encroaching into the neighboring property by approximately 1 foot. The application for the lot line adjustment is intended to reconfigure the property line between the two properties to resolve the encroachment and ensure that the residence at 729 Trueville is entirely within its own parcel boundary. Oh. The project complies with the applicable development and performance standards consistent with the provisions and requirements for the zone, with the exception to the side yard setback and minimum lot width requirements. The applicant is seeking approval for a variance to reduce the side yard setback from 5 feet to 3 feet and to lower the minimum width requirement from 50 feet to 46.5 feet to accommodate the new property line realignment. Due to the existing configuration of the properties, the lot line cannot be reconfigured in a way that would remove the property line from bisecting the existing structure while also maintaining the side yard setback and minimum lot width without demolishing or removing the existing residence. The variance is appropriate as the request is minor in nature and consists and existing conditions presents an unusual circumstance that is unique to the subject property. The proposed project is categorically exempt from the provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act, and the required findings have been included in the draft resolution. Tonight's recommendation is to find the project consistent with the general plan and development code and approve the project as proposed, subject to the findings and conditions outlined in the draft resolution. And I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Planner Bell. Do any commissioners have questions for staff on the presentation we've just heard?
I have a question, but it may be more appropriate for our comments after the public hearing, so you can defer me to after the public hearing. But really the question that I have is, how did this get past the original development application in 2016 without having been surveyed and noticing the incorrect placement of the structure relative to the property line?
In the application for the 2016, the residents for 595 South 7th Street did include a survey and identified the structure crossing over the property line. However, during a review of the single family residence, we do not correct nonconformities proactively unless it's a life safety issue. And in this case, it was not a life safety issue and was not required to be resolved during the permitting process in 2016.
Has that changed or is that still the case with city development code?
That is still the case unless the applicant seeks agreement with their neighbor and they voluntarily choose to resolve the nonconformity.
Thank you. So in that same vein, I'm assuming that both of the property owners are agreeable to this resolution?
Yes, both property owners were required to sign the application upon submittal for review of the lot line adjustment.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions of staff at this time? Seeing none. I will open the public hearing for item three. I do have a speaker request form for Mr. Victor Rocha or Rocha, if you'd like to come forward.
So you basically said that there was never a survey done, but on your guys' plans, it showed the neighbor's house on the property line. And you guys never did anything about it. So explain that. And then two, I thought it was only 2 feet. I thought it was from the fence to the house was 2 feet, not 3 feet. So I want to make sure that's right before we even continue with this lot line adjustment. And I'm 595 South 7th Street, just so we know.
I don't want to eat into your time. Did you have any other comments or questions?
I just want to make sure it's right before, because you guys told me stuff in the past, and then it's not been the same way, and then I got to run through hoops to get it all done. Just like the water basin thing, same thing at my house. I had to run through hoops to get that done. So I don't want the same issues that I had in the past with you guys.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the room who'd like to speak to, if you'd like to come forward? And please introduce yourself, and we're happy to hear what you have to say.
My name is Kellen Costello. I'm the former owner of the 729 Trueville property. The lot line issue became apparent during our sale process. The buyers requested a survey. We did the survey, found that we had the encroachment, worked with the Roaches to come to this solution, which was to adjust the lot line to match the existing fence line, which both of us had believed to be the property line, or at least I had always believed it to be the property line. I purchased the house in 2017, I believe, after the other property had been built. The home was there and existing, and then the Roaches, I can't remember the exact year they purchased it, but they purchased it again then subsequent to that as well. So both properties were existing and there when we purchased it. Nothing was ever disclosed about the encroachment when I purchased the property at 729 Trueville. The intent here is basically, or at least our intent here, is to match the lot line to the existing fence line that existed at the time of purchase of both properties between us. I think Victor stated that it's about 2 feet. I think I stated in the emails I had sent to Kyle approximately 3 feet. I no longer live in Grover Beach. I've subsequently moved to the Bay Area. And so I said approximately 3 feet. It had all the surveying document, all the measurements were on there. So the intent was to request a variance from the 5 foot setback to match the setback that exists at the lot line or where the new lot line will be. So if that's 2 feet, if it's a foot and a half, whatever that is, to match that existing fence line was our intention. Basically to right the wrong of the house being built when there was an encroachment there and allow both property owners to maintain the properties in the same exact fashion as they stand today and they stood when we purchased the properties. And then when the new buyers purchased the properties, the property I used to own at 729. And the new owners of the 729 property are aware of all of this and are aware of the lot line adjustment agreements and everything else that exists since the transfer of property. Thank you. And thank you to Kyle Bell as well for his help as we worked through this process.
Sure. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the room who wants to speak to item three? Seeing no hands go up. Is there anyone on the phone?
No, there's not.
Then I will close this public hearing. Commissioners, do you have questions? Further questions after public comment.
Chairman, if you'd like, staff is prepared to respond to the questions that were asked during public comment.
That's
if your commission would like those answers.
I think we'd all appreciate that, if you could clarify.
Absolutely. And yes, I do. First, I want to confirm that, yes, the survey that was done for the house that was constructed in 2016 did include a survey and did identify the neighboring property on Trueville encroaching upon the property line. As I mentioned before, that wasn't required to be fixed during the permitting process of the residence for 595 South 7th Street. And currently, this situation is being proactively addressed with the property owners. The city is not requiring this lot line adjustment, but it is necessary to address this encroachment for life safety. And so we will make sure that the property is within its, the residence is entirely within its property. And the setback distance, let me make sure I have the map up here. So currently there's a 1 foot encroachment. The property line is being adjusted to provide a 3 foot setback from the existing structure, which is where the existing fence is located. And then the property line to the north of the property is also being adjusted by approximately 1 foot east. And so there's a little jog between the property line as is shown on the screen in red.
Do we have any further discussion among the commissioners?
I'm going to pull this thread one more time. So when the 7th Street house was built in 16, the encroachment was identified. Was the 7th Street house built with a standard setback to the encroaching property line? And now the new property line effectively does not meet setbacks for either property? Or was the 7th Street house built far enough from the new property line to still conform to its setback?
Yes, I can address that. So the property at 595 was built exceeding the minimum setback requirement. So I believe there's about a 9 foot separation between the properties. I think it's 8.67 to be exact, for a little pop out for one of the restrooms. And then the existing residence at 729 Trueville was constructed much earlier. I do not have the exact date of when that residence was built, but that residence was built with this property line on the property when it was under common ownership. And so that has been there for quite some time.
So with the property line moved to where you're showing it in red, the setback for the Trueville house will be shortened. The setback for the 7th Street house will still be conforming.
Yes, that is correct.
Any other discussion? Thank you, Vice Chair Swift. I don't have any questions myself or comments. Seems like everyone's trying to work it out as best they can, so let's move forward. Do I have a motion to approve item 3, development application 24-25?
I move we approve development application 2425 as submitted.
Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Ms. Ratana, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Halverson?
Yes.
Commissioner Hoffman?
Yes.
Commissioner Holden?
Yes.
Vice Chair Swift?
Yes.
And Chair Mann?
Yes. The motion passes. Moving on to the big ticket item of the evening. We move on to item 4, development application 24-36. These are amendments, and we will hear presentation from Community Development Director Megan Martin and Senior Planner Kyle Bell.
All right, hello again. All right, so the development code is a key tool for turning the goals and policies of the general plan into reality. It sets forth the rules of how land can be used and developed, shaping the city's physical and economic landscape. The Community Development Department is committed to reviewing the development code every year to keep up with the best practices and find ways to improve our standards and procedures. Since the last update in 2022, we found a few minor changes that can help clear up some confusion, correct some inconsistencies, and make sure everything aligns with the general plan and recent changes to state law. On May 28th, 2024, the City Council held a study session where staff was able to share the proposed changes to the development code to the City Council. The council directed staff to seek feedback from the community on a few key changes that were highlighted in the community outreach summary. And then along with the technical updates identified, there was also several new state laws that affect the standards pertaining to housing development. These laws generally aim to make it easier and more appealing to build housing across California. To make sure the development code aligns with these new laws, the staff worked with MIG Consulting to review and update the code to comply. The changes in the report are based on lessons learned and opportunities for improvements from implementing the 2022 development code. Tonight, we're looking for the commission's feedback on these proposed updates.
While there are quite a few changes in the report, we will try our best to provide a quick overview of the updates in each chapter and then highlight some specific items we'd like to bring to your attention. The proposed revisions for Chapter 2 are minor in nature and intended to provide for clarification and consistency. The changes include minor revisions to allowable use tables, including streamlining opportunities for mixed-use development projects. Modifications to Chapter 3 include clarifying language for development standards that are applicable to existing and new residential developments, such as fences, screening, and upper story open spaces. Changes are intended to support livable and attractive neighborhoods and balance community concerns such as privacy, safety, and aesthetics. Chapter 4 updates are primarily focused on ensuring that the city's accessory dwelling unit ordinance is consistent with recent state law changes. Other changes are also intended to clarify objective requirements for accessory structures. Chapter 5 includes a minor update to remove an outdated reference. And then Chapter 6 outlines the permitting process and procedure for all permitting types. Changes to this chapter are intended to improve the city's permitting process to be more clear, concise, and efficient, especially for housing development projects consistent with state law. Speaking of recent changes to state law, there's a new provision called SB 684 that is an update to the Subdivision Map Act, intended to streamline the review procedures for infill development projects that consist of 10 homes or less. The new law mandates a ministerial review process for subdivision applications associated with qualifying infill projects, which staff refers to as urban lot subdivisions. And the new section has been added to Chapter 8 to address these new requirements under the Subdivision Map Act and outlines the review requirements for qualifying projects. Chapter 9 includes definitions throughout the development code. A new section has been added to separate all land use classifications from general definitions. Additional changes to various definitions have been made to improve consistency throughout the development code. Effective community engagement is essential in shaping the future of the city's development policies. To facilitate the public engagement process for the city's 2024 development code updates, the city conducted the following outreach initiatives. The council held a study session on May 28th to discuss and consider the proposed amendments. Staff met with Coastal Commission staff to get feedback and ensure changes align with the city's local coastal program and the Coastal Act. The suggestions from the coastal staff have been included in the amendments. One second. The draft of the amendments was made accessible through a dedicated webpage designed to provide comprehensive information about the project. And on June 18th, a community workshop was held on Ramona Garden Park to present and discuss the key changes that were proposed. We also provided an online survey to gather information on specific changes and explore additional ways to improve the development code. As a result of the feedback received through the online survey, staff has identified several discussion items for the Commission's consideration regarding specific changes to the development code. Item one, as part of the survey, staff asked the community on whether or not to include, to continue prohibiting upper story open spaces on ADUs and accessory structures. The survey results were nearly split, with a 41% in opposition to the prohibition and 38% in support. In response to the survey results, staff recommends amending the code to prohibit roof decks along ADUs and accessory structures, but allow for other types of open spaces such as balconies, terraces, and attached decks, so long as they comply with the upper story open space standards. And again, as a result of the survey, the community provided the following feedback for the Planning Commission's consideration regarding upper story open spaces. 46% of survey respondents oppose the additional setback exemption for open space areas of less than 50 square feet. 68% of the survey respondents supported introducing a design standard for guardrails to screen personal belongings. And then if the Planning Commission agrees to these changes, staff has drafted some revised language to include in the amendments for the Council's consideration. In the survey, we also asked the community if they supported changing the review threshold so that some projects could be reviewed by the director instead of the Planning Commission.
Currently, projects with five or more units or any new non-residential square footage are reviewed by the Planning Commission. The proposed change aims to align with the SB 684 to ensure consistency with review procedures for residential projects and to support the city's economic development goals by simplifying review procedures for small-scale commercial projects. The survey results showed an even split between support and opposition to this change. We are now seeking feedback from the Commission on whether on the appropriate review thresholds for these types of projects. The revisions to the development code are considered administrative and will not result in any direct or indirect physical changes to the environment and are therefore exempt from CEQA. And then after tonight's hearing, staff will take the Planning Commission's recommendations to the City Council for review and adoption. The project will also be sent to the Coastal Commission for final approval within the coastal zone. And then staff's recommendation is to recommend the City Council adopts amendments to the development code and approve the local coastal program amendment. And I'm available for any questions.
And I will just add, thank you, Mr. Bell. I will just add that we will have the public review draft up on our screens as well as in front of you on the, for your television, for our viewers at home on their televisions, so that as your commission asks questions about specific sections, we can quickly locate to that section and have a more meaningful discussion, and our audience is able to view that text as well. So if you could reference your section specifically, for example, 6.20.030, we can then quickly navigate to it, have it up on the screen so that those in the audience as well as those at home are able to view what it is that we're discussing.
Thank you very much. Do any commissioners have questions for staff? I will call on you in alphabetical order, if I can remember who's who.
Good summer.
I think we start with HA. Commissioner Halverson.
It's always me. No, I just have, I assume we're going to go all over comments and discussion in the next section of our deliberations. Is that correct? Yeah. Okay.
Commissioner Hoffman. Commissioner Hoffman, do you have any questions for staff based on the presentation?
I just wanted to know, the amount of respondents who respond to the survey was definitely pretty low. I mean, at least I thought. So I just wanted to know if that was, I guess, what you were hoping for out of that, out of the survey in terms of the number of respondents, if there was a goal.
I mean, our goal is to always reach as many people as possible. We can't control the number of respondents or the number of hits that we get on our website, but we posted it to the main page of the city's website. We posted it to the dedicated 2024 Development Code Amendment page. We also collaborated with Tripeppy Smith, who's our dedicated social media rep, to post it twice on social media for folks to be able to utilize that that link. But the number of respondents are those that we received, and that's the best that we were able to achieve. But we're always hopeful that more people are able to be reached. We also rely on the public process, which is a public notice is published in the newspaper, identifying to the general public that this meeting would be held to discuss these amendments. People can come, provide their public comment, and then they're also provided additional opportunity for public engagement and comment during City Council when their decision is made final. So we try to get out as much as possible, but we can't control how many people typically respond. And as planners, we always want it to be 100%. But this is, in my experience, this is fairly typical, especially with something that's not a major overhaul. This is just technical cleanups. So this is fairly standard from across multiple jurisdictions.
Commissioner Holden.
No, I have nothing.
Vice Chair Swift.
Yes, can you go back to the, it was like your last two or three slides that looked at the the public comments and how you decided on those. So it was roof decks on ADUs and accessory structures. And I think you stuck with no roof decks on ADUs or accessory structures.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, and then there was the setback requirements for roof decks And how did that land? It was less than 50 square feet. There were no additional setbacks requirements. And over 50 square feet, they had to have additional line of sight setback from the adjacent property line?
That is correct. Proposed changes included that additional exemption for the smaller than 50 square feet. From the community feedback we received, it seemed that there was some opposition to that exemption. And so the feedback we received was to remove the 50 square foot exemption and just require the same setback requirement for all upper story open spaces.
So all upper story open spaces now have a line of sight setback requirement to keep you from basically looking into your neighbor's yard.
This is the proposed change from the public, and so it's not currently written into the amendments, but we have some draft language available in our backup slides that we can pull up if we would like to discuss how that can be modified or incorporated into the update.
And so what are we going to do with the amendments tonight? Are we going to have them added in?
So your role this evening as a planning commission is to make a recommendation to the city council on how you'd like to see these amendments move forward. We've identified several, what we ran into with these comments that we were suggesting with the setbacks and or the size threshold with the upper story rooftop decks is that we were split kind of 50-50 with public comment. And so staff's recommendation, instead of writing those amendments into the code, is to propose to your commission the two options, allow you to make an informed decision based on staff's recommendation, and then you make that recommendation to council. So once you decide as a commission whether these recommendations move forward, council takes final action.
And then the third one was the guardrails providing screening for personal items on the roof deck.
That's correct.
Okay, now I have another question. Procedural question. So I understand how the public outreach worked, and that's all good stuff. But staff's role in this was to hire a consultant, right, and go through and try to clean up essentially the code and make it up to date with changes from Sacramento and maybe clarify some things that applicants have been confused about and that staff had a hard time explaining things that weren't clear and that sort of thing. What about what role does staff take in developing new changes to the code? Do you consider any of those kinds of things that you would like to recommend to the city council to adopt? Or are you just trying to clean it up and make it clear?
The scope of this was specifically to clean up, provide clarity, establish any of, resolve any ambiguities. But staff is always looking for opportunities to be innovative and to improve upon the current development code standards. That may mean something from another jurisdiction is exciting and could be applicable here, but staff would only make that recommendation following significant public engagement to ensure it's what the community wanted and that it was consistent with our general plan and the policies for the different land use designations. For example, someone earlier this evening mentioned different heights of different structures in different zones. If all of a sudden other jurisdictions are all going up to six stories, it's not in our best interest to say, yes, we should too. It's other jurisdictions are doing this, why? And what would that impact be here? And does the community actually engage with that and find that it would benefit them? And then based on that feedback, the recommendation to your commission would be, actually, no, they don't want that. Here's why. Now, what would you like to recommend to council? So, yes, we are always looking for innovative ways to improve upon our development code, but the scope here is clarity, resolve any ambiguities, and also codify what state code has kind of pushed down from Sacramento.
Right. So in the very beginning of this process, you guys didn't sit down and have a little brainstorming session and say, well, you know, this there was an item that Chairperson Mann brought up about JADUs and why aren't they included in the allowed developments for R2 and R3. And you thought that was a great idea. Things like that, you know, things that are not just a cleanup, but things that would that make sense, right? And maybe help the city develop and maybe help, I don't know what, low-income housing and so on and so on. I guess I just don't see the impact of staff, which you guys are the best place to be able to come up with those things. You interact with other organizations and so on and so on. To me, this is an opportunity to make some changes to the codes when we do make a revision, even if its original scope is just to clean things up. It's a great opportunity to push things forward as well, and maybe present some things to the City Council that they didn't think of. So I guess my point is, I would encourage you in the future when there's an update of one of these items that you take the opportunity to maybe look in a broader spectrum and maybe provide some input into the council.
Well, I'd like to be very clear. We did propose an ordinance, SB 684, as a requirement of the state, and we've completely drafted a brand new ordinance for this city. It'll be the first in the state of California. No one else has adopted that. So we didn't just look for providing clarity and resolving ambiguities. We also can't identify every corner of our code that might need improvement, and that's where the public comes in. That's where your commission comes in to help support staff identify these areas where there could be more improvement. We also have a very heavy workload that we process on a daily basis. This isn't our only project. I'm proud of the work that my staff's done. We constantly look for areas to improve, and we constantly look for areas to be more innovative. We're going to be taking a development impact fee deferral program that is cutting edge, and we're proud of it. And I think we will continue to make those improvements. We look forward to your commission's additional comments this evening on other areas you may have caught that we didn't, and as well as those comments from the general public.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments, questions for staff on the presentation from the rest of the commission? I did want to just clarify. So I had emailed asking about this is section. I have it on page 3 of the ordinance. So it's the table 2.2 with residential zones, allowable land uses, and use permit requirements. There we are. So related to in the draft that I saw that I commented on, ADUs were permitted in all 6 of those zones, but JADUs were not. And so I see that has been clarified. To me, a JADU is going to be lower impact than an ADU, just because it's a smaller unit and it doesn't have a bathroom, to my understanding. So to be able to carve out a part of your house that's a little more private, I think is reasonable to be able to do in both R2 and R3. So I appreciate that that's been updated, and I'm in agreement with it. I think as it comes to the outdoor space, I'm trying to get my head around like what that means. So do we say we allow 2-story ADU? Is that correct?
Correct, yes. Could be a 2-story ADU up to 25 feet height.
So that could have a balcony or an outdoor deck area on that second floor that would be covered by the roof, presumably, or not. But that would need to have, if it's abutting another property, would need to have these setback. They would be subject to the setback rules. Is that what we're looking at? But if that balcony were facing like the main house, that wouldn't necessarily be a problem.
Correct. Yeah. So it would be an additional setback from the property lines. So a 10-foot distance would be required for any upper story open space associated with that second floor.
Okay. I think I understand that. Thank you very much. I will now open the public hearing on this item. Public hearing is open. Is there anyone in the room who would like to speak to item number 4?
Chairman and commissioners, I want to say I thank you for your service. I'm Debbie Peterson, and I served on the Planning Commission from 2004 to 2008 and is the chair for the last 2. And I'm really glad I don't have to try to figure out all these ADUs and JADUs. You have a big task. I wanted to make some comments more along the lines, perhaps, of Commissioner Halverson's inquiries. And starting with in 2004, I first became involved because the whole city was asked to come to 3 different sessions and provide their vision for how they would like to see Grover Beach develop. And there was a lot of talk about West Grand Avenue and making it lively and vibrant and seating outside and pedestrian oriented and view sheds. And in 2014, we had a local coastal plan finally approved by the Coastal Commission. And I'm really excited about what's actually happened because West Grand is vibrant now. We do have restaurants. It does work. It's done what it was supposed to do. But there were other things that they asked for and that were in the local coastal plan that seemed to have been left aside. And one of them was people did not want anything higher than three stories. And they were very concerned even at having four stories at Grand, north and south and east and west, a block of 4th and Grand. And now we're getting five stories. And these things have cumulative impacts. Pretty soon, those view corridors, which were protected in our local coastal plan, are no more because we have huge five-story buildings that all along Grand Avenue, which really wasn't the vision of the people. The other thing is that people do want to see affordable housing. We're not rich people in Grover Beach for the most part. And I'm concerned that we're seeing new developments that don't have affordable housing. I'm hearing a lot of concern in the community about new development that doesn't have sufficient parking, and there are cumulative impacts there. And then the other thing that I'm seeing, and I used to call myself a tree hugger, I guess I still do, is that the tornado raised a lot of our trees, but the city has raised a lot of our trees too. Margarita Avenue used to have a lot of trees along it. Grand Avenue used to have a lot of trees along it. And behind my house, I used to have two squirrels and a hawk and an owl and monarch butterflies in a grove of trees that have all been cut down now. And I have a great ocean view, but all I can see otherwise is the parking lots. And they really raised paradise and put in parking lots. And so I would encourage you and in your future vision to consider all of those things and consider the cumulative impacts. Sure, if you're just cutting down five trees, it's not where they nest, it's only where they eat. But if they can't eat, they can't nest.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else in the room who'd like to come speak? Please come forward. You have 3 minutes.
Hi, I'm Pamela Storton, resident of South Grover Beach, and thank you, Commission and staff. I'm frustrated that there hasn't been more community outreach. I'm talking forums, talking to your community on this, our Spanish-speaking side, that the online survey, when we talk about social media, I'd like to know what social media is outreach. Is that Nextdoor? Because when I looked at the survey, it was very confusing. I'm a real estate broker, happen to understand square footage, setbacks, those things, but it was very technical, and I don't think your average citizen could understand it and answer. It was hard for them to see it, understand, and give feedback. So if Nextdoor is the outreach and you got five people or whatever that number is, of course. Director said, our goal is to reach as many people as possible. This is checkbox communication. This isn't outreach. Outreach is going into the community, sending emails, putting stuff in their water bills, talking to your community, having public meetings and inviting the public for a round table discussion about what they want in their community, such as what's been done in the past. I'm very concerned that you're driving the cottages out so we can have development, two-story development, lots of stuff on one lot. That drives out people, and it may be people that certain people don't want here because now you want a new Grover Beach. A lot of people like the cottages. That has been our history. I think you need to put this on hold and have some true community outreach, because otherwise we're in a CCB situation where we haven't done proper, heartfelt community outreach. Consultants are not community. cutting edge is not community. Community is listening to your community, engaging them, informing them, working in partnership with them. And remember, parts of our city are disadvantaged communities. So SB 1000 states that you need to do that. Maybe not the entire city, but there are areas that are. And I highly recommend that you, this city starts to listen to their community and ask them what they want and not make decisions in a vacuum. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak?
Hello, Liz Dukas, North Gober Breach. I would echo Ms. Peterson's and Ms. Storton's comments. They are spot on. You say, I thought we were going to have a workshop tonight, and then now you're saying this is the final before it goes. I tried to do the online thing. There's no way a layperson could understand any of that. It was just too much. It was just way, way too much. I remember our visioning workshops from before. We had a room full of people. It was on a day where everybody could attend, and they had a binder from all of the responses from the community. And I'm shocked that we have 30 responses, and you're going to base our whole future on a handful of responses when we have not been allowed to put our input in. I asked Mr. Bronson specifically. He was supposed to have 3 workshops before this. As far as I know, we've only had one, and it was in a time when everybody was extremely busy. I'm not surprised a lot of people didn't show up. But you need a lot more community outreach before you can make any decisions on this, especially heights, footprints. We have a lot of single-family homes here. You cannot put a 3-story monstrosity in an R1 zone next to a single-family residential ranch-style home. It does not look good. You're trying to put these big box buildings in a residential neighborhood, and it doesn't look good. And people that come here to visit don't like it. The buildings on 4th and Grand are way, way, way more than anybody. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of your citizens disagreed with anything over 3 stories, period, ever. And that is because there's a problem with what's happened historically and the people in position now. I want to know, is there still R1, R2, R3? I see it up there that there is, but you're going to put a 2-story ADU in an R1 residential home when there's already a home there. I find that extremely intrusive. I just don't think that that is what people wanted or intended on any basis, especially the increased footprint. So I've noticed that these homes are taking up huge amounts of spaces. So anyway, I do appreciate all the work on Grand Avenue. I'm sure it's going to look great, but it was way, way, way more than any. And current people here now know that nobody ever wanted anything over 3 stories. That building on 4th Street that is 4 stories was never meant to be. John Scholes knew it at the time. He gave these people variances. And we knew that that was going to be the jumping off point in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Randall Myrick. I'm from Grover Beach. I don't know if anybody even considered water. You know, I've been here my whole life. I'm a contractor, but I've been in construction since 1976. I was in a Roy Graney High School on up to now. There's going to be another water problem. And when you have you got a motel going on here, all these 4-story condominiums, going to be a lot of toilets, flushing, sinks. You got restaurants, some of the bottom ones. I don't know if anybody's considering the water issue, but we're going to have another one. And usually in the past, we had a moratorium. You guys are looking like New York City here. It's ridiculous. The one on 4th Street is actually leaning because you dug a 25-foot hole in the ground, 20 foot wide, quarter mile long. You don't do that after the struck. You got 32,000 tons on that thing. It's The miscommunication, I call it lying, but, you know, I like being straight up. These Ackermans, all this stuff, why don't you send flyers out? I didn't know about it until somebody told me about this meeting. It's ridiculous. What do you guys, what's going on here? And you need probably some, at least one person in construction, maybe qualify our real estate that could be on the planning commission would definitely help. You know, that's how I learned from on-the-job experience. But Matt Bronson, well, I don't feel very comfortable or even around that guy because every time his lips move, he's lying. If he's giving you guys information, you need to really think it out. And you need to drive in South Grover, look at our streets, how bad they are. And at nighttime, I almost hit somebody the other night. We're the darkest city I've ever seen at nighttime. These are affecting, the way the roads now are affecting these businesses big time. You can't stop or you can't even drive and get into their approach. Some of this stuff needs to be thought out a lot better. These ladies are right. Every one of them are. And we 3 minutes is just not enough time to talk about everything. But the people, the public and property owners, they need to have more of what's going on here. Not that's why they're not, they won't be angry after it's already done. And the, you know, $4 million fire engine, just because these things are so high. We were told the engines and the motors are going bad. It's cheaper to buy a new one. If you look at that thing, you're not going to be able to maneuver it on any of these streets if there's a car parked on the street. The thing's massive. Does that mean I only got 29 seconds? But you guys, I like the questions David was asking over here. But you guys have a big responsibility up here. And it, you know, it sucks sometimes, I guess. But yeah, some of it's just common sense thinking it out. And I mean, fences, people can look over the fence and see somebody in their backyard, too. That a lot of this stuff, when they say cleanup, are they talking about the decks that are already built? To me, cleanup would be something that's already been done. You're cleaning it up. Is that what that's? Oh, hi.
Thank you very much. Would you like to come up and speak? Go ahead.
I'm Marcia Bolianitz. I've lived in Grover Beach for 32 years. I was gobsmacked when the first three-story building went up on 4th Street. And I, you know, I don't want to see any more buildings that are over three stories high. I'm very concerned about longtime people and new people who come in, and there's no ocean view for them if this continues. Then addressing the two new buildings that are going up on Grand and 4th, I just recently heard, and I believe it's true, that each of the units will have one parking space per unit. That's not going to work, and it's too late, but, and I'm totally against meter parking, street parking, but I live on South 9th Street, right close to Rockaway, between Rockaway and Long Branch, and it is going to be absolute parking wars once those owners and tenants move into those ginormous buildings with their boats, their motorcycles, their 2 to 3 cars per family. It's going to affect everyone. And the traffic is already pretty dangerous on Grand Avenue. There are a lot of people who were murdered in the crosswalk walking with the lights because people choose to be distracted drivers. Now, when we get more people driving and more blind spots that are created because people are going to park right up to the intersection of our numbered streets and West Grand Avenue, there'll be more people that are not safe as pedestrians or drivers. The other thing that I'm concerned about was on January 1st, or perhaps. No, it wasn't July 1st, it was January 1st. A new law came into use in California where it's illegal to block an intersection of a main thoroughway and any residential and business streets. And the law says, the mandate says, that all cities must paint their something like 10 feet of their intersection that hits the main thoroughway so that people don't park within 2 inches or 4 inches of, say, West Grand Avenue. And no one's painted those curbs.
Thank you for your comment. Is there anyone else in the room who wanted to speak this evening to item 4? Seeing no one, is there anyone on the line?
No, there's not.
I will close the public hearing for item 4. Commissioners, responding, or I guess are there any items that staff needed to respond to in the hearing
that
were identified?
There's several comments that have been made. We can respond to them in the order in which they were received, unless you have a specific question that you'd like us to address.
Shall we start with that, commissioners? Yes, I think we'd like that.
Okay, I will do my best.
In the interest of everyone's time.
I'll do my best. I'm pretty good at taking copious notes, but I'll look to Mr. Bell in the event that I have forgotten any. So one of the comments that came up was regarding 4 stories and 5-story development within Grover Beach. As your commission is aware, our development code was amended in 2021 and 2022, which allowed for development to go up to 4 stories along West Grand Avenue. That is a maximum of 55 feet in height. The 2 developments at the corner of 401 and 402 West Grand Avenue are 4 stories. They are not 5 stories, but they do include a rooftop deck, which some people may interpret as a 5th story, but it is not considered a 5th story. There was a question about whether or not we are looking to establish affordable housing with these developments. Staff works with every developer that comes into this community and is looking to submit an application for new residential development to identify pathways to provide for affordable housing. With our last updates in both 2021 and 2022, the staff at that time adopted amendments to its code to provide for fractional density, which is smaller units that allow for more units on a property at a smaller size, hoping that that is a, quote, affordable by design. We also passed into our code or adopted into our code state density bonus law, which again allows for you to have increased density on your property so long as you provide for a certain percentage of affordable housing. And the requirements there vary depending on the type of affordable housing that you provide. For example, 10% so long as they're moderate income, or 25% density bonus if they're very low income units. So we also provide for that. We are also in the process of amending our development impact fee ordinance and recommending to the council that they establish a development impact fee deferral program, which would further incentivize certain impact fees being deferred for up to 17 years, so long as there is an affordability component to that development. So I can't stress enough that we try to identify pathways for developers to build affordable housing, but it is not something that we can mandate nor require, but we are doing the best that we can. There were some comments regarding trees, and we have not received any direction from council to pursue any amendments to our municipal code regarding trees in our city, but I know that it has been on the radar of the city for a while. It just has not been we have not been given formal direction to make any of those changes. As it relates to the survey, there was a comment regarding that it was very technical. And while I agree, and I had that comment when we were first moving forward with this, and I think in the future, what we'll do is we'll be sure to have things be a little bit higher level. But this was for this scope of this project was for technical revisions. It was not intended to identify policy. So we were taking specific issues that we were having in implementing our code, and we put that to the survey to ask the general public how they would feel about it. So we appreciate the feedback, and we'll be sure to modify any surveys in the future to be higher level while still achieving that technical aspect that we were looking for. As it relates to the issue of heights, footprints, things changing throughout the city, again, I want to remind this commission, staff is not proposing any changes to any of those requirements. The only item in the development code that is being recommended for change is something coming down from the state, which is to allow up to 25 feet for a two-story ADU. That is a threshold that the state offers. It is not mandated, except when that ADU is developed on top of an existing garage. So if your commission this evening would like to keep that height at 16 feet, we can absolutely modify that language and take that recommendation forward to council. So again, a new ADU would be limited, could be limited to 16 feet in height, except when built on top of an existing garage, which would be required to be allowed to go up to 25 feet. There was a question regarding existing decks and if the rules change, how would those be impacted? If any of those decks exceed the thresholds that, that we are responding to following public comment, then they may be considered non-compliant moving forward. That tends to happen as development codes update. But again, the city does not take a proactive approach on resolving those issues unless that property then comes in for an application. And if a significant amount of that property is changing, then we would require it to come into compliance with our existing code. Last items that were discussed, 401 and 402 West Grand Avenue. Just want to remind your commission, you voted to approve that project in 2023. It met and exceeded the parking requirements that are established in our development code. And those parking requirements are well established by qualified professionals through the Association of Transportation Engineering Group and the policy manual that they have established in jurisdictions, I believe, across the United States utilized to identify appropriate parking for multi-level development. And again, these are smaller units. They're studios to two bedrooms. While, yes, I think on average, a California home has 2.5 vehicles per household. Smaller units do not. A studio, for example, likely would not result in an individual having two vehicles. They're 600 square foot studio apartments. So just keeping that in mind that all of this is taken into consideration when establishing parking minimums. And the city has adopted parking requirements consistent with those procedural manuals and the parking numbers associated with that. And I don't know that I've forgotten anything because I take copious notes. Did I miss anything, Mr. Bell?
I believe you covered it.
Okay, thank you. And I'm available for any additional questions you might have.
So there was one other question that came up in the public comment earlier in the meeting, and that was the differences between water retention requirements between commercial, industrial, and residential properties. Could you enlighten us on that?
Absolutely. Every property, regardless of zone, is required to retain 100% of their water on site, stormwater related.
Thank you.
So 401 and 402 were required to and are installing, have installed at 402 and are in the process of installing stormwater chambers that will capture 100% of the water on site.
Can you elaborate on why that is required?
We can do our best. We are not Public Works and we are not the engineering division. However, my understanding is that the current storm drain infrastructure here in the city does not have the capacity to collect and transfer the storm water that would otherwise result in more impervious surface. So we exceed the regional board's minimum retention requirement and have for many years required the 100%. It is far greater than most other jurisdictions. I believe one other area of Arroyo Grande also requires the 100% retention, but typically jurisdictions require, I believe, anywhere from 30 to 40% retention on site, thereabouts. And yeah, so we require 100% for any zone, any project in the city.
So from a water conservation standpoint as well, it's a shame to see all that fresh water flow out to the ocean. Regardless of whether we have the storm drainage to be able to handle it or not. So it's very positive to capture that water, let it trickle into the ground, and we can recover it later.
Mr.
Are there other questions from the other commissioners?
We're going to have a general discussion after this, right?
I believe we are in the phase of, we are past the public hearing part of it from the public.
But you haven't closed the public hearing.
Have I?
No, we closed the
public hearing. Oh, you did. Oh, we're just discussing.
I did close the public hearing.
Okay. I was busy writing notes.
Fine.
Copious notes.
So this part is the discussion.
Okay.
So, yes, we are in the discussion phase. So we can talk to each other and
so,
we can ask
so
questions
do we want
of staff.
To, do we want to review the items that they have on slides first, and then we can talk about our own individual recommendations? Just a suggestion.
I think that sounds that sounds good to me. Is everyone in
sure.
agreement?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So shall I go ahead and begin to read the questions and we can. So the first item of discussion on this slide is to whether we should continue to prohibit upper story open spaces for ADUs. I believe, or and accessory structures. So this would be including balconies, decks that are on the second story, or decks attached to a first story, it sounds like, as well as rooftop decks.
Yes, I would just add that it would be for an attached deck along the second story. So upper
okay.
story is just above the first floor.
Okay. Oh, yeah. It does say upper story right there.
So this would prohibit a deck. As an example, an ADU over the top of a garage, they would not be able to have a balcony or a deck as part of that ADU.
Under the current code, yes, that is accurate.
Do you distinguish between balconies and decks that share the same level as a living space versus a upper story open space, which is clearly above the living space? Is that distinguishable in the code?
Under the code update, we have clarified the difference between an attached deck and a terrace. A terrace would be like a recessed portion yeah. of the second floor that would provide for open space. Under the current code and the revised code, all those would be inclusive under the term upper story open spaces and need to comply with the requirements. But under current code, any upper story open space, whether it's an attached deck, a terrace, a roof deck, a balcony, is currently prohibited as associated with an ADU or an accessory structure.
It would be nice to see that language further refined. This is now me opining, I guess. Further refined so that, again, as a use case, you have a ADU over a garage. Right. So the entire living space is second story, and that situation, they would be permitted to have open space that occupies the same second story level as the living space, but not roof deck. Does that make sense?
That is correct. That is that's currently staff's recommendation for this evening based off the input we received from the public.
So no roof decks, but second story open space for second story ADUs that occupy the same existence plane as the living area.
I do have some draft language on the next slide I can pull up to help put some more context together. So this change would be bullet number 3, and this would be a new section added to the upper story open space, but I can pull up that up on the screen after you have a chance to look at this, but this would say that roof decks, which shall be prohibited along any detached accessory structure or detached accessory dwelling unit. And this would live under the upper story open space section. I can pull up on the screen if you'd like.
So this would continue to prohibit a rooftop deck if you just wanted to put one on your garage.
Correct.
Because the garage is considered an accessory.
That was actually one of the reasons why this came up. We were receiving quite a few requests to put roof decks on detached single level garages, and we don't currently allow for that. So that was why this was born into should we or should we not allow them? What does the general public want? And we received a higher percentage of individuals in the general public that did not want to see upper story rooftop decks on detached accessory structures, garages, or ADUs.
So the reason for that, I'm trying to guess because I don't see the reason, is a aesthetic reason that it doesn't look good, or is it a privacy question, or?
I believe that it would be privacy mainly is the biggest concern from neighbors when a roof deck is added to any accessory or to any even primary structure. But I would assume privacy. Not sure if we received any general feedback in the comment section regarding that, but.
Because I would assume the setback requirements would still apply for a roof deck on top of a garage, right? You'd have to set it back from the edges and you'd have the walls. So it's supposed to be providing the privacy to the neighbors.
You're absolutely correct. There's still a perception of privacy and security that individuals don't want to lose that sense of privacy in their own home. And so with that, staff did not want to recommend any change, but wanted to provide that clarity so that we weren't running into this issue anymore with general contractors as well as property owners.
Well, it puts the issue out in front of us and the city council, so the policy can be made. Okay.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking of if you're constructing an ADU. I'm sorry, I should have let the two of you go forward. Okay. If you're constructing an ADU on top of your single-story garage, and so ostensibly you're building some sort of staircase. Does that have to be interior to the footprint of that garage, or can that be exterior? Is that a deck?
It's a little ambiguous. There's a little bit of ambiguity in that in our current code. So, as such, we look at landings a little differently than decks. So, if the top of the staircase was providing access to the upper story ADU, there might be some flexibility for that opportunity, but beyond the landing itself, an additional deck space would not be allowed.
So it would be that we would somehow have defined the maximum size of a landing to be not a deck.
Correct. And I believe it's identified under building code, and it's 3 feet by something. I forget the
3 by 4 or something, maybe.
We can rely on a more general statement that building code provides that limitation or that threshold.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking in terms of providing smaller units, units that can be rented for less than what we're seeing now, which, you know, let's remind ourselves, we're seeing studios rent for $2,000 a month or more. It's a nice to have a little bit of private outdoor space. And I guess I feel like there should be a way that we can allow, I don't want to bar it completely for
Well, let me add something else to the discussion. A lot of what we're doing, and a lot of it's required by the state to be able to utilize the real estate that we have more effectively and put more units per square foot in our city, right? So to do that, one of the things we're compromising on is open space. You know, we're saying, oh, we can give away some of the open space we require you to put into a new structure if you put in some low-income units. But the residents kind of suffer from that because now they have less open space to enjoy, less garden space, less lounge chair space. So to me, a deck or a balcony or whatever would be very useful for someone who has very limited ground recreational space on their property.
Yeah, I guess where is balcony defined in all of this? You know, if it's a 4 foot by 8 foot section off of a sliding glass door, is that upper story open space? Is that a roof deck? Is that a balcony?
We do have a definition of balcony. I can pull up on the screen in one moment.
So we established a new definition for balcony. As he pulls it up on the screen, I'll read it. Platform that projects from the wall of a building 30 inches or more above grade that's accessible from the building's interior, is not accessible from the ground, and is not enclosed by walls on more than two sides.
And we're talking building walls, not
correct.
Balcony railings or whatever.
Yeah. Correct.
And for clarification, the term balcony here applies to the lower level as well, but for the upper story open space section would only pertain to above the first floor.
So again, back to my use case, you have a ADU built over a garage. you have a small landing where you go up the stairs to the second floor, and you can have a balcony, provided it's enclosed on two sides by walls of the unit, but you cannot have a deck.
Are you referring to the current code or the revisions?
On the amendments that we're proposing.
On the amendments, you'd be allowed to have a balcony open to three sides, so long as it complies with the additional setback requirement, so that the 10-foot separation from the property line would be required for that open space.
I thought the amendment we were proposing was to exclude roof decks from ADUs and JADUs.
So roof decks would be above the second story. So
okay.
So the a deck attached to the structure with access directly from the living space would not be considered a roof deck. That would be an attached deck.
Gotcha.
Having lived in an apartment with absolutely no outdoor space and one that did, it makes a big difference. So my opinion about upper story open spaces is that I think we should allow them.
Of course, if you add upper floor open space and a view, the price of that apartment just went up. It becomes less affordable.
True that. 'Tis a quandary.
Yeah, did you have anything you wanted to ask about? So on this item, I guess I'm not in favor of continuing to prohibit all upper story open spaces for ADUs. I'm comfortable with restricting the rooftop deck. I think we do need more folks to weigh in on that. Because I don't know. Well, but because that's, I mean, especially if it's a rooftop deck on a garage, you're not, it's not in exchange for actually adding additional housing. It's just a nice, you know, I guess it's kind of a nice to have for the current. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it's up to the developer to decide whether he wants to put this on or not. We're just, maybe we're just going to allow him to do that if he wants. His decision will be based on economics and his targets for the rent. You know, is it low income, ultra low income, et cetera. So all we're doing is taking a prohibition away.
It's not a you must, it's a you may.
Yes. You must not or you may. Yeah.
And I just want to make sure we're distinguishing between upper story open space that is at living level, not above living level.
Correct. And so the current prohibition is for all open space, upper story open space that are prohibited for these types of structures. The revision would only be for roof decks would continue to be prohibited, while other types of open space would be allowed with these types of structures, so long as they comply with the other standards associated with the upper story open space requirements, such as that additional setback.
So you'd have your balcony, you'd have anything on that second level if you're above the garage, but you just wouldn't have a connection to the roof.
And again, the setback is just in relationship to the other property lines, not the main structure of the, you could have a balcony projecting towards the main house.
Correct.
That balcony would be subject to current design standards that are already in place, and that primary structures typically have the privilege of building.
So our ground rules for tonight, are we, if a majority of us say that we want to allow this item one, then you will take that as a recommendation from the Planning Commission to the City Council?
Yes.
Okay. Do we have a, do we have to have a voice vote to do this, or is it just a consensus of three people or what?
We can, yes.
Well,
I'm just trying to figure out how we come
to conclusion on this.
Yeah, so typically it's taking action on the staff's recommendations, and these items would be, it would be most helpful that it be a voice vote or just a unanimous nodding of heads, if it's a yes or a no.
Okay, I guess I'll ask, is anyone particularly feeling strongly about allowing the rooftop deck? That we should include that as open space.
I agree.
We're not talking about rooftop decks. We're talking about upper story open space.
Yes, which are two things. One, like currently both rooftop decks and all.
Everything's prohibited.
Everything
now.
Is prohibited.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think the options are to allow both of those types of things or allow one and not the other.
I guess I would go for the language that was in there, item one. It's the living space level.
Allow one but not the other.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So I'm leaning towards that.
It's called compromise.
Are you?
I'm just wondering, when would this come up again if we decided to delay the decision? Delay the decision related to this item or the development code amendments at large?
To the discussion items.
If the Planning Commission felt that they needed more time to make these, one of the options for today's evening is a continuance of the item, but that would require an additional Planning Commission hearing and a pushback. But
well, I'd actually recommend that if the Planning Commission doesn't feel strongly on one of these items that we're asking for your input on, we could also forward that as a non-recommendation by the Commission and leave that to the City Council to make a policy call on whether or not we prohibit upper story open spaces but allow for the balconies or prohibit all of them as the current code allows.
Yeah, in the same way you presented it to us tonight.
Correct.
You could take it to them the same way, and they can debate it just as we have. So do we have a consensus? I don't want to say
looks like the staff recommendation captures the one but not the other we were discussing.
I guess I will ask for a voice vote, starting Commissioner Hoffman. Shall we recommend amending the code to allow for living space level upper story open spaces, but not rooftop decks?
Yes.
Commissioner
is my vote.
Holden?
Yes.
Commissioner Halverson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Swift?
Yes.
And I'm a yes.
Again. Item two.
That was item one. Usually we burn through these commission meetings, but this is really important that we speak to this. Item number two there has to do with the size of the open space. Should we provide an exemption from the additional setback requirement for upper story open spaces that are less than 50 square feet? So we're talking a 10 by 5.
So I say privacy is privacy, and we should maintain the same setbacks.
I guess I'm in agreement with that at the moment. If that's the intention of those setbacks. So,
I agree.
Okay. Let's move on to item three. Which is requiring the guardrails to be designed to effectively screen personal belongings. We're again talking about open space, these open space places. So,
yeah, correct.
What does that mean objectively?
So I do have a slide that some draft language that we can look at.
Essentially, furniture, other personal belongings, decorative items that would be up on top of an upper story open space or even on a balcony would need to be screened. So solid wall or some level of opacity or transparency that would limit visibility of those belongings to the right of way. From essentially be able to be visual from the street. And
we've drafted some language for your consideration this evening. It'd be bullet point number two.
Which says the guardrail shall be designed with at least 50% opacity to visually obscure views of personal storage within the open space.
So most of these are solid walls that I've seen. I haven't seen too many plastic walls or rails or that kind of thing. But I guess that's what we're talking about, right? If the person decides to surround it with a wrought iron railing, we're saying that you need to put something opaque there so that we can't see him sunbathing up there.
Or glass. neighboring jurisdictions like Pismo, that can be a big issue with the glass railings versus the wrought iron versus sure. the solid wall.
Okay. So. Sounds like a practical thing to me.
Any other questions on the language there?
No.
I guess I'm curious, when it says 50% opacity, would that mean, so if I have 50% of a span, half of which is opaque and half of which is open?
No, that's not what it means.
That's not what that means.
There's nothing opaque around here.
I think I already see a cleanup for next year.
100% opaque.
The 50% something you just pulled out of the air, or is there other examples throughout codes that recommend 50%? Because I know, for example, on our fence ordinance, there's 70% opacity on fences above 3 feet, 6 feet.
In the front setback, correct.
Yes, yeah, so this 50% comes from the city of San Luis though. This is one of the big sticking points during their public review processes that included a recommendation nearly every time to make sure the balconies were screened. And so that's where it originated from, and we thought to consider it here.
And they've been using the 50% for how long?
I don't know the answer to that.
I believe I first heard it about 7 years ago.
Okay, so no obvious lessons learned have come back from that you would say we don't want to do that?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
But this could also be what fabric, I suppose, of a certain opacity.
Think of it as a frosted shower door.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would still need to comply with the building code for safety. Mm-hmm. The railing is required at a 42-inch height and does have some structural integrity that needs to be addressed through the permit process. So if it does include fabric, it would be just an additional aesthetic, not a structural requirement.
Are we all comfortable with that language?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so the language you've got there for bullet point two, section 3.1, I think we're all in agreement with. So item four on the discussion items, feedback on the review thresholds for administrative development permits subject to the director's review without a public hearing.
So we made this recommendation, just to provide some clarification, we made this recommendation simply because it mirrored what state law is already passing down through legislation. This is not a requirement, it just was a suggestion, because ultimately, for example, with SB 684, 10 or fewer units being proposed within a subdivision are no longer subject to discretionary review, meaning that your commission will not see that application. It will go through our rigorous review, ensure that it meets all of our objective design standards, is compliant with Subdivision Map Act, but it will no longer be discretionary. So this mirrors those decisions that the state's already making as it relates to streamlining housing development in communities. But again, not a requirement by the state. This was just a suggestion from state.
So it seems pretty obvious to me that this is a good idea. I don't know why you didn't just go ahead and put it in.
Well, I would agree with you. However, it does take... it does take out a level of public input that a community is used to providing. And that to me is a significant, could have a significant impact on perception in the community. And so we didn't want to just make a recommendation providing me with all of the authority to approve things. And again, have it be optically as though we're not cross-referencing our codes, you know, state legislation, et cetera, to ensure that it meets all of our requirements. But
no, I can understand.
But yes, it.
I can understand why you're following the process.
Yes,
but again, I guess
I believe this is where the state is going.
Exactly. So we really don't have a choice in this. And
do we have to go there now?
We don't.
You do not. However, with SB 684 applications, we are already there.
Yeah, I think I would agree with your point that any time you can insert the public's voice into the process where appropriate, I think it's a good thing.
And
it gives them an opportunity, right? It gives them an opportunity to come before the commission. So if it doesn't slow down the process badly, or the state doesn't mandate otherwise, I would be in favor of, keeping the commission engaged, especially at this transition time in Grover.
And I will correct myself in one respect. There is still a level of discretionary review subject to public notice. So these items would be publicly noticed to properties within 300 feet of whatever the project site was. That my decision, based on our review of the code and its compliance with the code and our general plan policies, would be appealable to your commission. So if a project comes forward and I were to make a determination, yes, this is consistent with all the policies, standards, et cetera, we would send that notice out to the general public. The general public would have an opportunity to say, we want more information, and then have an opportunity to appeal that to your commission. And that ultimately is appealable to the city council. So there would still be involvement. It just wouldn't be a formal public hearing.
And if I could just add one aspect to that, the director would also have the authority to elevate the review to the planning commission if there was a lot of feedback from the community or concerns about the level of review, and a public hearing would be held by the planning commission to review that application upon the director's recommendation.
So the current situation, where are the breakpoints now?
Yeah, so it's a little bit split under the current code. So bear with me as I try to explain this.
Sure.
Under the current code, a mixed-use project with fewer than 10 units is ministerial under the current code. A housing project of less than 5 units is ministerial under the current code. So this is establishing a process for projects that kind of in the middle between the 4 units and the 10 units, or 5 units and 10 units, apologize. And so we're actually making it consistent between the mixed use projects and the residential projects, and then establishing a director review. Bear with me. Under the current code, a mixed use project of 10 or less units would be subject to a ministerial review process. However, because it has a commercial component, is subject it, again, to the planning commission review. So it's kind of a loop for mixed use projects. And so there's a little bit of nuance there. And so we're trying to establish a clear consistency and clarity in the review procedures for whether it's a residential project, commercial project, or mixed use, about the number of either square footage or number of units that establishes its review procedures.
What was the public's feedback on this, on the survey?
The survey results on this one were completely
audio
split,
recording
41% to 41%.
Dual channel.
And the remainder of that percentage was neutral, which we...
Is now exiting.
Can you bring up page 59 of 157? We can show you the language to kind of better illustrate the types of projects that would be subject to an administrative development permit. Again, still subject to public notice, public input, and following that appeal procedure, but trying to mirror the state requirement as well as provide clarity as it relates to mixed-use projects versus strictly residential projects.
So I know there's a lot of text on the screen. Just for clarity, there were some areas of our current code that were silent in the types of development projects and review thresholds. And so these were all established to provide clarity on what level of review would be triggered. So either direct, this section is the administrative development permit section, which is established as a review procedures for a director level review. If you'd like to look at the planning commission level of review, I can pull that up as well.
And your commission can choose to stick with the current thresholds that we have and not make this change. And so we would strike this and continue to rely on our current thresholds for residential and mixed-use development subject to planning commission review versus director review. But as mentioned previously.
Commissioner Hoffman or Commissioner Holden, do you have some questions on this item?
I don't.
So just so I understand, So a month ago, we had a development application that was 2 units on what
a property that has currently got a law office or something else, and that came before us. So with this change, that would not automatically come before us.
I can't remember if they were requesting any modification to standards or exceptions, but let's say it was just a clean conversion and addition based on the project that we're all remembering. Yes, this would have been subject to my review, not to Planning Commission.
Well, for that specific project, it was subject to a use permit because the underlying zone required a use permit, a conditional use permit for a mixed-use project on that zone. So that's what triggered that. The Planning Commission's agree for that specific project.
But if it was a different zone, we can use that as a really good example of that otherwise would not typically have come before your commission.
Okay. I'm
also
thinking about this
on dual channel.
The size of the lots in Grover Beach, I mean, so going up to...
Is now joining.
Going up to... So our minimum lot size is 4,500 square feet. And for an R1 lot, I believe the maximum density is 5 units per acre. Is that right?
I can tell you.
I believe the actual minimum area for a lot is actually 6,000 square feet for the R1 zone.
Okay, maybe I missed. I thought it was 50 by 90. But
that's the minimum width and the minimum depth, but there's also a minimum area.
Oh, okay. So that's a little over a tenth of an acre, right? But we have a max of 5 units per acre. I mean, I just feel like there's other things in the code that are the number of properties to which this might be an advantage is probably not very many. Like, nobody's got an acre lot in Grover. So
there's very few.
If you wanted to try to put, you know, 10, at least 1,000 square foot units, right, because we're not talking about the fractional density piece of things. You know, it seems, I guess I don't feel like it's that big of a risk to, you know,
development would still be
devolve this to the department?
Absolutely. Development would still be restricted by the maximum density allowed per acre, or maximum number of units per acre. Also, any modifications from the standards might trigger Planning Commission review. That's where your additional discretion becomes important. And again, a lot of these developments likely trigger a use permit, so it will come before your commission regardless. I don't believe that this would have that large of an impact, but again, it's up to your commission. I think that this would help streamline small lot redevelopment for more housing, but we're not seeing too many of these types of applications, and so again, it's just a way to help streamline that process for property owners and different developers, and they're still subject to the same rigorous review and discretion as if it were to come before the commission.
Are there any other questions on the changes to the review, I guess, requirements?
No questions.
So discussion item 4, we're in agreement with the changes. Is that?
I would like to see it stay a status quo.
We're dissenting, yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And the reason we're dissenting, I think, and my co-David here may chime in as well, it's mostly for the public exposure for these projects.
Okay.
We might as well not give that up yet unless the state forces us to. And I understand the expediency, perhaps, that's provided by skipping our review and letting the director approve. It may save them a month, maybe, who knows. But we think it's worth the sacrifice to keep the public involved in the process.
Okay.
That's our two.
I will add to what Dave said is that if you find as development picks up here that becomes a real time burden to significant number of developers, you know, that ought to be brought back to us because we don't want to slow people down, but I think we also don't want to remove the perception of public involvement in some of these, especially at this stage in Grover. Just my opinion.
It's my experience that recommendations from the state become requirements eventually, but I agree that right now is not a good time to remove public engagement from something, even if it would streamline things.
So that's the 3 to 5 of us. I defer.
You can try to talk us out of it.
Yes.
So is that consistent with the residential and non-residential thresholds? The status quo would require that for any new square footage of non-residential space would be triggered to Planning Commission review under current code. So just make sure that's clear.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, so we're retaining review or discretion for the commission. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So can I add a discussion item number 5? It may screw up discussion items number 1 and 2.
No.
But you mentioned keeping ADUs at 16-foot max height unless they were built on top of an existing garage. Why was that not a discussion?
We identified that comment in the survey, and a majority of respondents indicated they were supportive of allowing for up to 25 feet for a detached ADU. And so that wasn't one of the items that was a close call, per se. But we can certainly, it's certainly up to discussion for this evening as well, so we're happy to receive any of your feedback on that specific item.
Well, I brought it up. I guess I should tell you what my thinking was. Yeah. So,
what do you really think?
What do I really think? So, you know, the whole point of ADUs is to create housing, and really with the intent of creating affordable and workforce housing. And that was the point, right? Or senior citizens or whatever it happens to be. And a two-story ADU, you know, is going to turn into a 1,200-square-foot ADU, which is not affordable. And it's no longer a granny flat versus a one-story, which is more likely than not, given our small lots, going to be in the, you know, somewhere between 400 and 800 square feet, which could be considered affordable. And so I find it sort of skirting the purpose of ADUs in the first place if we're allowing two-story luxury ADUs to go into our residential ones. It's sort of stretching the intent. That's my opinion. Yeah, keep them at 16 feet. You've got a nice 800-foot granny flat. Likely affordable. Didn't get an upper deck view, so the rent should be low. It's kind of the point.
Yeah, nice. Good point.
Any other opinions on keeping the height limits as is or in favor of changing them to 25 feet?
So in staff's opinion, what would be the advantage of extending the structures higher?
The intention was just to be consistent with the allowance to build an ADU above a garage so that the standards for those types of structures would be consistent. But other than that, we're happy to receive any feedback from the commission.
I just wondered if there was a reason, a practical application why that would be an advantageous allowance.
Consistency, and again, state law allows for it, and we assume that at some point that might be what is lobbied to be required or mandated in the future. But ultimately, it was just consistency. So we didn't have two separate standards for accessory dwelling units, and we were having to balance that in explaining it to developers. But again, no tie to either one. We're happy to continue status quo.
Okay. What is
you would still allow a second-story ADU over a garage.
Correct, not to exceed 25 feet.
But a ground floor ADU couldn't exceed 16.
Correct.
But the dwelling is still a single story, even though it's on top of the garage.
That's right. Yes. That's right.
Yeah. So it keeps the square footage down.
It keeps the square footage down.
Yep.
And as you said before, the majority of the respondents said that they did want to update the code so that it would be 25 feet for ADUs?
Correct.
Okay. I mean, if we're talking about the public weighing in, the public weighed in.
Yeah, all 30 of them, yeah.
All 38 of them.
Yeah.
I personally would be in favor of having the code be consistent, such that if a two-story structure, whether that's a garage plus a unit or two stories of living space, if you're allowing a two-story second unit, and it's only you're only allowing it for two stories because you have car storage, I feel like that's, and I mean, there, so a 1,200 square foot unit might be large enough for a family to be in. And we certainly have, or, you know, so it might be the grandparents are in the front house and then their younger family with the little kids are living in the back. I think it does give us more flexibility there. So I would be in favor of going to 25 feet.
What are the setback rules for a two-story 25-foot ADU?
4 feet from the rear and side yard.
So you put a 25-foot tall two-story 4 feet off of the rear and side yard of a property.
And that's consistent with an ADU above a garage as well.
And to be clear, that is required by state law. That is not something that the city established. The 4 feet. I just want to make that clear. That's not a city-initiated setback. The state mandated that.
So again, I think thinking about privacy to neighbors, allowing by right two-story ADUs that meet state shortened setbacks is putting two-story boxes right against fence lines with neighbors.
So as long as we have the discretion, the state is allowing us that at least for a little while, I think we take advantage of that discretion and not build two-story boxes.
The second story, does that have has an additional setback, though, for an ADU?
That's up to debate right now under the ADU state laws. So it's a little unknown on whether or not we would be able to enforce that upper story setback. It's really up to the courts to decide at this point. At this time, we're not recommending to include language to provide an additional setback for the upper story because we do have to route this the ADU ordinance to HCD for approval. So we have to make sure we comply with the ADU handbook and the HCD's requirements.
Yeah, I guess my leaning would be comply with the state's requirements for allowing ADUs by right with the shortened setbacks, but not allow the height crammed up against the neighbor's fences.
Yep. Which could also be revisited in a year, right?
Oh, yeah.
At the next review, as we have more discussion and consensus around things. Are we comfortable with, I'm asking down here, I would like to see us move forward now, but I feel it sounds like we're not there yet with going to 25 foot if it's not a garage.
Yeah, I think I'd like more time to think about it. Okay. To defer.
So does that clarify where we're at with that piece?
No. Do we have a majority of
to pull the 25 foot.
I'm confused now what I want it the way it is was presented to us. So not the change.
So you want to allow the higher.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you're allowing?
So staff was recommending based on the survey to allow all ADUs, whether it be a new construction or above the existing garage, to be 25 feet. Currently, we allow new construction to be 16 feet, and if it's above a garage, it is 25 feet.
I agree with the way you've proposed it.
So shall I do a voice vote on allowing new ADUs that do not have a garage underneath them to be 25 feet? I'll start.
I think you're this. Well, no. Yeah, you might be the swing vote.
Commissioner Hoffman.
I'd like it to remain the way it is right now. So the 15 feet. Okay. And not the consistency.
And Commissioner Holden? So you are in favor of keeping it 16 feet? Or going to 25?
I'm in favor of the way it is it was presented to us. So that's the 25.
I'm also in favor of, sorry, I should go to the next one. Vice Chair, sorry, Commissioner Halverson. It's getting later in the evening.
I'm in favor of restricting it to the 15 feet right now.
Okay, or 16, I think it is.
Maybe it's 16, sorry.
And Vice Chair Swift?
I'm in favor of keeping it at 16 feet.
Okay, and I would be in favor of moving to 25, but it looks like we are in the minority at the moment.
And so we'll propose, as recommended by the majority of the commission, to maintain it at its current height, and the council will take final action on that decision, weighing in public comment as well as the commission's recommendation.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sorry for throwing that item.
I'm glad you did.
Well,
no, I think
I'm surprised we don't have a whole bunch more.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. Are there any other items that were not listed out as discussion items that we noticed in the revisions that we'd like to discuss now as a commission?
Not from me.
Commissioner Hoffman? Commissioner Holden? Vice Chair Swift?
Nope.
And I do not have any further questions. So are we prepared to, let me see what the proper language
I'll
is
make
here.
I'll make a motion.
Yes, I need a motion to
Recommend that the Planning Commission, to recommend the City Council adopt amendments to the Grover Beach Municipal Code. And with our amendments or whatever, with our other suggestions.
You could simply make it that it would be a motion to recommend consistent with the direction that was provided by the commission to staff.
Okay, can I say that? Yes. That's what I said.
So we have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second that motion.
Clerk Ratana, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Holden?
Yes.
Vice Chair Swift?
Yes.
Commissioner Hoffman?
Yes.
Commissioner Halverson?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes. The motion passes. Thank you.
Whew.
Great discussion, everyone. So, moving on. Seeing no regular business this evening, we will move on to commissioners' comments. So this is outside of everything else that's been on the agenda. And I will call on each of you alphabetically, starting with Commissioner Halverson.
Oh, it's always me. I don't have any comments tonight.
Commissioner Hoffman.
I just want to say I appreciate staff's dedication to continuous improvement with the amendment updates. And this was outside the scope of the amendment updates, but I just wanted to make a comment since it's near and dear to my heart that that you mentioned the green waste containers in there. Are the green waste carts in there, and to be consistent with the Integrated Waste Management Authority's verbiage, they call them green waste / organics container or carts. So just wanted to make that note if you ever wanted to adjust that in future amendments.
Commissioner Holden.
I have no comments.
Vice Chair Swift.
Yes, I have comments.
Carry on.
My comment actually goes back to the discussion around the original item 3 from the public hearing, not item 3 specifically, but really that topic. Grover Beach was the Wild West when it was developed. The property lines are horrible, horribly marked, in most cases not even surveyed. And I didn't even get recommendations to survey my property from anybody at the city. It turned out to be a contractor inspector that came by to look at something after I'd bought the house. And he said, before you do anything, you better get your property surveyed because the fences are not necessarily where the property lines are at. And so I did. And in fact, my property line was 2 feet further onto my neighbor's property than was obvious in the layout of the fences. Had a big effect on my setbacks for my development. And I just wonder, can the city play a more supportive role in helping property owners to get their surveys and to assess their projects against the actual real recorded survey so that you don't get situations like this guy where you now has a lot line moving because of of development and the parties were surprised. And I will say the parties were probably surprised because, we have some real estate agents in the room. I even disclosed to the selling agent on the house next door to me that the property line was not where the fence was. It was 2 feet further over, and the real estate agent did not disclose that to the new buyer. And so, fortunately, the new buyer was friendly, and it sounds like these people on this other lot are being cooperative. But I see your department playing a more supportive role in, one, letting people know, get your surveys done, because in some cases there are no completed surveys, and two, what that means to them down the road in terms of, you know, marking the property lines properly, disclosing to the real estate agents, disclosing to, you know, the adjacent neighbors. So you're the one that sees these things, and so you have kind of that first interaction when somebody says, I want to build something, and you say, get it surveyed.
Yes, we already do that. Any new development application or building permit application, when they come in, requires dimension site plan, and those plans need to be stamped by a qualified professional, typically a surveyor. For example, height certifications, a surveyor is required to go out and map the topographical features of the site plan and identify where that pad height is, so that when we measure the top of the roof line, that it doesn't exceed that surveyed point at the pad. So we do already do that, and it's a requirement as part of any new development application. We also require preliminary title reports. So if there's any easements, if there's any discrepancies, anything like that, we're reviewing those documents and ensuring that the applications and the lot itself, one, that it's legal, and two, that there isn't anything that we need to have a setback from, for example. So we do that already, and we'll continue to spread that message with each application that comes in.
And otherwise, I think I reflect Maya's comments that this was a lot of work and did a nice job on it. You know, it was complicated even for people who have been looking at it, and so it was nice to have some time to review it and get feedback from you. Would have been nice to get more community feedback, but I was one of the five at the at the forum, and so that's all I have.
I think I've gotten through everyone. I also want to echo thanks to all of staff who's stuck with us here tonight, and all of the work that went into these revisions and the outreach that was, you know, the efforts that were made. I agree that our current, just generally, community, you know, getting information about your community can be a little tricky, especially if you're not as, you know, so much has gone to online communications, that if you're not as tech savvy, you may not hear about things. And I wonder if, generally, not just for this commission, but as a city, you know, what are some other ways that we can be kind of more educational? I think sometimes I'm a little, not intimidated, but sort of inhibited from too much public discussion online and in social media, because, you know, I am a member of the commission, and if there, you know, there may be some limitations in terms of expressing my opinions, and if, you know, it's a small town, if there's other folks from the commission also in that forum. So there's not really I don't feel that I, even if I wanted to educate, you know, folks, that maybe it was my position to do that. And so I don't know if that can come through the city, you know, sort of more of a discussion, like, why are we seeing these changes? Like, what are the benefits of them? Like, you know, going to 55 stories, for example, makes an elevator pencil out for a development. And if you're going to build a three-story building with no elevator, you know, it's not going to be as attractive. So there's things about, like, what we're trying to do here with these changes. You know, it sounds like the three-story height limit sat there for a decade, and nothing happened on those lots. And now we have homes. So, you know, I see the benefits of that. Anyway, not to belabor things, we are past 8 o'clock here. But again, thank you very much for all the work on this. Thank you to the commission. That was a good discussion. I appreciated it. Let us move on to the Community Development Director's report.
I actually do not have any comments for my report this evening, but I'm available for any questions you may have of anything going on in the community.
Would anyone else like to share anything?
No.
Are we good? Then I will adjourn the meeting.